life.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
Justice.
Justice. Just this.
Just this.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
Succession.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Citizens.
Right.
Well.
Peace.
Losers.
Men.
This is my mistake, let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Culture.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solid.
Responsibility.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM. And over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on SaskTel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. Well, Happy New Year, everyone. I'm Jim Hutchings with my co-host Gord Barnes, and we're going to have a look back at 2015 to look at some of the things that happened in the world of human rights, some of our successes, and some issues that we're still focusing on to get resolved. And welcome, Gord.
Well, thank you, Jim, and to all our listeners who are tuning in today, Happy New Year's, and we wish everyone the very best for 2016.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have to say that our 2016 looks a bit brighter than 2015 was, just because we've got some people in place now that seem to have a little higher regard for human rights. Just my opinion, but that seems to be the case. And one of these things that evidenced by our new government making an effort to get 25,000 Syrian refugees into Canada, by the end of February or so, something like that. It's a good start, as far as I'm concerned.
That's right, and you know, we've talked about the refugee crisis on this program several times over the last year. Certainly, something we want to continue to focus on, not just with respect to people who are needing to flee the conflict in Syria, who may be living in refugee camps in, for example, in Lebanon and Jordan and other neighboring countries, but also other people who are refugees as a result of other conflicts. And we need to continue to remind ourselves that this is not simply about people from one part of the world who are in very, very difficult circumstances and needing to seek a refuge, and we certainly need to continue to work on that issue.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I mean, When you look at the United Nations, they have departments that is specifically tasked with looking after refugees. And I would have to say that they're, to a large extent, very underfunded and undermanned, and it's largely due to money, unfortunately. So hopefully something that's something that can improve in the future. I thought that what we could do was have a look at the year past, at some of the subjects that we touched on a radio show, on Human Rights Radio here on CJTR. When you look back over them, we had some impressive shows.
That's right. Our guest list for 2015 is really an impressive list, I think, to reflect on. And I think you're going to be able to share some of the highlights of that from the last year, Jim.
Well, we started things off really well, Gord. We started off with Cindy Blackstock at the end of January, and you may not remember Cindy, but if you're a human rights activist, you certainly will know who Dr. Cindy Blackstock is. And she actually visited Regina and talked with Gord myself. This was in concurrence with a visit to the University of Regina, and she was delivering the Woodrow Lloyd Lecture. And we didn't actually have Cindy with us, I guess.
That's right.
We were talking about her visit, and but we were able to go and actually listen to the Woodrow Lloyd Lecture, and which was very good. Also on that occasion, we talked about a prisoner of conscience in Saudi Arabia, and we were also talking about the upcoming visit to Regina by Sister Helen Prejean. And if you'll recall, Sister Helen is a Catholic nun in the States who's made it her mission to campaign against the death penalty, to abolish the death penalty. And it was a great show. It was a great show. And we also talked about Amnesty's Secretary General Alex. And I'm not sure what he was up to. It's hard to keep track of Alex because he is all over the world, literally, and lots of times Alex is in places where the average person would likely rather not be. I think of South Sudan, where he's been a number of times, and it's not a tourist destination.
Yeah, that's right.
And just looking a little further here, we had Crystal Giesbrecht, and she was co-hosting with me, and we were talking with Bridget Keating, who is an author and doctoral student from U of R. And Bridget has been doing some research in Mexico, and she was talking about some similarities between Mexico's and Canada's treatment of Indigenous peoples. And there were some uncomfortable similarities that we had to talk about there. It was a very good show. Yeah. And in another show, we were able to talk with Ahmed Sabawi, a friend of the show, our special guest, again, Gordon, myself. And we had a video. This took us a little while for us to put together, if I recall, but it was well worth it. He was working on a video that he had shot. When you're doing something like this, You have to put a whole bunch of pieces together, and his video was very much together. And what we did was we watched it and picked on some of the audio. Of course, since we're not we don't have a video segment of this, so we got the significant audio, and including, if I recall, a clip from Kofi Annan, the Secretary General of the United Nations, on one of his visits to Gaza. And we ended up with a better understanding of the conflict in Gaza, from a Palestinian point of view, to be sure. But I think that we had a pretty good idea what was going on there. And let's see what else we have here. Oh, this was really good. We had five journalism students. This was in March 6th of this year. And they visited Human Rights Radio and talked to us about some of their projects. And they ranged a fair bit. One of them was talking about a brutal murder in Bangladesh that has all but been ignored by officials there, to something a little more, less important, let's say, unless you're a beer drinker, the unsettling fact that all our old familiar beer brands in Canada are no longer owned by Canadian companies. So anyway, there's a wide variety of topics there. And we always have fun having young people do portions of our show. Some of our most interesting shows have been done by young students or journalism students, and this was no exception. Then in February, the way my page is lined up here. We had Jill Arnott on, and that was myself talking with Jill, and she is the executive director of the U of R Women's Center, and talked about the then upcoming health fair and the need to change attitudes about sexual awareness and education. And that was for half of that particular show. And then in the following half hour, Maria Aman spoke with Chelsea Real and Lonnie Elliott about the Regina production of the Vagina Monologues. And that's been an ongoing thing in Regina for some years now. And still a worthwhile thing to attend. I've been to a few of them, and it's thought-provoking and entertaining at the same time, I would have to say. And backing up again here, this is February 20th, and we had the Arts Cares event, and it's held by the Community Research Unit, which is based in the Faculty of Arts at the University of Regina. And I spoke with Brenna Engel and Ritva Gaimbari, two U of R art students who had decided to take part. And this was a volunteer thing for them. Actually, they were volunteering for ourselves, for an Amnesty Group 91 of Amnesty International here in Regina. And here was a really good one here, too, where we got to talk with Regina author and educator Gail Bowen about the upcoming Freedom to Read event. And at that time, I guess she was writer in residence at the what was she?
She had been.
She had been. Right. Oh, yeah. Okay. Outgoing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we always enjoy our conversations with Gail. That's for sure.
That's right. It was a fun program.
Let's see what else we had here. Okay. Then in March, every once in a while, I manage to get a hold of my good friend Dan Lindsay, and I enjoy talking to Dan because I would have to say he is a frontline worker in support for the homeless, the disadvantaged, and trying to find housing that's affordable. And he tells it like it is. I'm sure that when some people listen to Dan talk about the way it is here in Regina, they wince. But it is the true facts. What is going on here in Regina? Because Dan is there. He's the one that's dealing with the consequences of the policies that are in place in our province and in our city, and you know, trying to help people as best he can. And of course, he's not alone, but there's still a lot of help that's needed in that particular fight. So, like I say, it's great. I like to get Dan on the show every once in a while to kind of get a report card on Regina, what's happening in this particular subject. And there are those, like I say, that I'm sure they're not comfortable listening to Dan, but I think he says stuff that needs to be said. And let's see here. Now we were talking about the Multicultural Council of Saskatchewan. That was on March 13th. And you and I, Gord, were talking with Rhonda Rosenberg of the Multiculturalism Council of Saskatchewan, and basically explaining what they are all about, you know, why they exist, and the things that they do on a day-to-day basis. And we talked about Rhonda's role and what she was trying to do. And we also touched on the International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination on March 21st and Regina's special Spring Free from Racism event, which is always a good event to go to on March 22nd. That's usually, what, the last Sunday in March, Gordon?
Yeah, close to March 21st.
Yeah.
So it's a... typically the closest Sunday there is.
It's a great event, and,
yeah,
and we try to be there ourselves every time that happens.
And I really want to acknowledge the work of the Multicultural Council of Saskatchewan. They've been one of the several organizations who have also been working to bring people together around the issue of the refugee crisis, but also raising awareness about racism in Saskatchewan and cultural diversity, and a really tremendous organization, well worth supporting. And if people wanted to, they could, any of the programs you've been mentioning, people are able to actually to go back and listen to if they're interested to, because you've got the podcasts online and easy to find.
They are still there. If you just go to humanrightsradio.podbean, as in a bean pod, only backwards, humanrightsradio.podbean.com, and all our podcasts are there, and you'll find lots of interesting topics for sure. Then we've got Melanie Rose. This was on March 27th. About a display at the Mackenzie Art Gallery called Moving Forward, Never Forgetting, which was described as a multifaceted event. And Melanie was a story keeper at the event and explained how important this work is to help us understand how colonialism has affected First Nations people. And, it's, to me, this is all part of an ongoing discussion that has been going on for some time and needs to continue going on. I think it has a role in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which has just wrapped up, and it's 94 recommendations. But it's all, you tie all this together and get an understanding of what First Nations has gone through since the Europeans started coming to this continent, and what has happened to First Nations, and what needs to be done to, I suppose reconciliation is part of it, but they need to have the opportunities that have been denied them. They need to have things like proper health care, water, schools, Shannon's Dream, all this ties in. It's all part of the conversation, and it needs to be talked about. And I'm really happy that in our province that we have a curriculum in our schools that kids can learn about this in school, and I think that is a really good thing in Saskatchewan.
And it reminds me, too, of, the fact that the Mackenzie Art Gallery was so good in terms of hosting that exhibit, that art exhibit, that was a very impressive piece to see. And we were lucky to have people like Melanie Rose and others as the host facilitators for that, the story keepers. And hats off to the Mackenzie Art Gallery folks for doing that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And still kind of on that topic, I had, in April, moving on into April, I had Sheena Koops as my guest. And Sheena is a teacher at the Burt Fox School in Fort Capel. And she is not First Nations herself. And but in the course of teaching First Nations students, she became very, very interested in treaties and what the treaties were all about and how they affected both First Nations and ourselves. And which leads me to pause in our program and remind ourselves that we are on Treaty 4 land as we speak. And so that's part of what this is all about. Sheena took it upon herself to improve her understanding of the treaties and share this understanding with everyone who will listen. And she wrote a song. I'm not exactly sure how we could get to it, but she has a blog, Treaty Walks. And if you do a little searching for Sheena and Treaty Walks, I'm sure you'll find it. It's a YouTube video. And actually, I'm in the video. But there's just pictures, still pictures, that are a sort of a slideshow as she's singing her song. And the recording of her song was actually done here at the CJTR studio. So I'm quite happy about that. And I think you'd be impressed by the song if you found it there on the Internet. Then moving right along into, looks like we've got June. Yes, June 5th, we spoke with Peter Gilmer. He's an anti-poverty activist with the Regina Anti-Poverty Ministry. And we were reminded that the United Nations Declaration on Human Rights specifically names adequate housing and food as human rights to which every person is entitled. And that in Canada, there are many instances in which both parents in a family with children work at jobs paying minimum wage and are unable, even though they're both working, because they're working at minimum wage, they're unable to meet the basic needs of the family. And I'm sure, Gord, you know of some people, I know of some people that are in that very situation where it's not because the people are not willing to work, but the jobs that they're working at do not pay enough. And so anyway, we talked about the possible solutions and progress that has been made and what needs to be done. And we urged people, and we still urge people, to talk to your local representatives in the city, in the province, your MP, about this issue and ask them what they're planning. I think, for example, I know that the Liberal Party in one of their conventions resolved that a guaranteed annual income was something that should be considered. And I think they're looking at it. It may not happen overnight, but there are jurisdictions in the world that are doing something about it. Most recent is Utrecht, a city in Belgium, I believe. You can correct me, Gord, if I'm wrong there, but I think that city is going down that track, as is Finland. Mm-hmm. And we've also, at some point in the past, talked about the experiment in Dauphin, Manitoba, that happened in the 1970s and was brought to a close because of a change in government. And all the data was just sort of stored away, thankfully stored and not destroyed. And there's a researcher who is now putting together a report based on the data from this experiment in Dauphin, and it's largely a positive experience they had. There were things that probably needed to be tweaked, but they weren't given the opportunity, and well worth looking at. So that was a particularly good show with Peter Gilmer.
I have to agree with you. I think any time we have a chance to get Peter Gilmer on the program is tremendous, because both he and his colleague, Bonnie Morton, are tireless advocates mm-hmm. who work at the Anti-Poverty Ministry. And, you know, I'm so impressed with the work they do. And it's tireless in terms of their advocacy work. So,
We've had Bonnie on the show, too, at some point. I'm pretty sure we have.
Wonderful people. And I'm really hoping we can have them as guests again in the near future.
And let's see what else we got here. Also in June, we had a program with Dardan Issoufi of Amnesty Canada, our French-speaking section. That's one of the interesting things about Amnesty in Canada. We actually have two sections. We're in the English-speaking section, and then in Quebec, they have their French-speaking section. And Dardan is the youth representative on the Amnesty Canada, that's the French one, board. and is quite active in his hometown of Montreal. And if you recall, Gord, we were in Montreal for the, I think it was the 50th anniversary of Amnesty.
That's right.
And they had a joint convention of both the French and the English speaking sections in Montreal in that particular time. And it certainly was a worthwhile event, well worth attending. We were quite happy participating in that particular event there.
And Darden was here with a group of students at the time in Regina who were studying English. They were all friends of his from Quebec who were studying at the University of Regina for a few weeks. And we were really lucky to have him, you know, as a visitor, because we got to learn more about the work of the Francophone branch of the Amnesty International Canada. But also, he provided an incredible amount of energy for the time he was here to our local activism. And I still stay in touch with Darden, and through him, hear about the work of people in the Francophone section of Amnesty International, and just reflect back on that. It was a really an exciting few weeks when he was here.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And last thing we're going to mention here before we take a little break at the bottom of the hour, a little different show. And this was one with Crystal Giesbrecht and myself talking with Crystal's sister, Dr. Amber Fletcher, about how climate change affects women differently, locally and internationally. So when we say locally, as I recall, that had to do with farm women.
That's right.
And Dr. Fletcher has been doing quite a bit of research in that area. And we also talked about the task facing world leaders, both to adapt to the coming change and try to mitigate these changes. And of course, you know, that has sort of started to happen finally after the conference in Paris recently. So that was very good news. So that was a very good show as well. So that was titled Climate Change from a Gender Perspective. And as Gord mentioned, all these shows are available on the internet. So we're going to pause here right now. I'm Jim Hutchings, and talking with Gord Barnes about the shows that we've done in 2015, some of the topics that we touched on. And after the break, we're going to play one of my favorite artists, Joni Mitchell, and with one of my favorite songs, The Circle Game. And Joni's been, I think, more recently really recognized as a tremendous songwriting and performing genius, highly regarded worldwide. So I'm looking forward to playing this for you right after the break.
Yesterday, a child came out to wonder. Caught a dragonfly inside a jar. Fearful when the sky was full of thunder, and tearful at the falling of a star. And the seasons, they go round and round, and the painted poles up and down. We're captive on a carousel of time. We can't return, we can only look behind from where we came, and go round and round and round in the circle game.
Then the child moved in the seasons, skated over 10 clear frozen streams. Words like "when you're older" must appease him, and promises of someday make his dreams.
And the seasons, they go round and round, and the painted ponies go
can't return, we can only look behind from where we came and go round and round and round in the circle again.
16 springs and 16 summers gone now. Cartwheels turn to car wheels through the town. Tell him, take your time, it won't be long now, till you drag your feet to slow the circles down.
And the seasons, they go round and round, and the painted ponies go up and down. We're captive on the carousel. We can't return, we can only look behind from where we came and go round and round and round in the circle again.
So the years spin by and now the boy is 20. Though his dreams have lost some grandeur, coming true, better dreams and plenty before the last revolving year is through.
And the seasons, they go round and round, and the painted ponies go up and down. We're captive on a carousel of time. Return, we can only look behind from where we came and go round and round and round in the circle again.
And go round and round and round in the circle again.
I never get tired of hearing Joni Mitchell sing. She's just got a wonderful voice and wonderful songs, Gord.
That's right. Great choice.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm Jim Hutchings, and I'm talking with Gord Barnes about 2015, what Human Rights Radio was able to do in terms of interesting shows about human rights. And moving right along here on June 26th, it looks like I did a solo stint talking about stopping torture, and that's an ongoing project of Amnesty International, and one that's so important, and it doesn't look like we're going to be stopping it anytime soon. It's just an ever-present, I would call it an ever-present evil in the world. That seems to be, maybe it sounds like it's over the top, but I don't think so. I think it's really something that people have to talk about with the representatives. It's interesting. I was looking on Facebook, as I do, just recently, and apparently once again, former President of the United States, George Bush, decided not to go to Europe. He was going to attend a gathering of some sort, I think in Switzerland, and then discovered that there are some Swiss activists actively and loudly campaigning for George Bush's arrest when he arrived in Europe. They take human rights very seriously in Europe, and it was quite possible that they would be able to have him arrested and then tried for his approval of the use of torture in Afghanistan and Guantanamo, all those things. He'd be called to account for the United States actions and his authorization of them, and which I would think would be, in my opinion, quite justified. It's hard to imagine how
that kind of behavior is justified. It's in the same, to me, it's in the same area as the death penalty, something that really needs to be abolished as being totally inhumane and unacceptable.
And I think the way to address it is, as you've pointed out, Jim, through that particular example, is to address the issue of impunity, where people who are responsible, in this instance, for serious human rights abuses in terms of the use of torture, where wherever they may live in the world and whatever role they contributed to the use of torture, right now seem to feel that they can get away with it. To the extent that they may feel that people are watching, that will hopefully discourage them, and we will begin to see an end to the use of torture, and that's certainly the goal of the Stop Torture campaign. But we will continue to work very hard on this particular issue, as you've mentioned.
Yeah, for sure. It's ongoing, and just given human nature and the way governments change in some of the developing countries, I think the temptation is there, and both sides of conflicts will indulge in it, and so it they need to be made to realize that the world is watching, and that's what Amnesty accomplishes with the letter writing campaigns. When we send letters to places like Iran or to Saudi Arabia or other places that indulge in this kind of thing. Moving right along here, I had mentioned Sheena Coops, and I'm looking at July. This was the particular occasion, July 3rd, that I had Sheena Coops with one of her elders, First Nations elder Alma, and she had some students from Burt Fox School, and she sang her treaty song. Let's see now. I'm just checking here to see what she did. She was consulting with Alma and other Cree elders to make sure she was getting the Cree words and the references and the history right. And so I think that is part of the process that resulted in the recording and the slideshow that I was referring to on YouTube. And we found out some more about how Sheena started down this path of understanding and how her song reflects the importance of treaties. And then on July the 10th, we talked once again about Gaza, and marking the one-year anniversary of the last flare-up of hostilities between Israel and Gaza. And we talked to Ahmed Sabawi about what has happened in Gaza since the fighting stopped and what needs to happen for a fair and final resolution in Palestine. And once again, it's my opinion that we need to talk about this. People don't realize the conditions that the people in Gaza live under, things that we would find totally unacceptable, where they have things like medical supplies that they have a very hard time getting into the country. They're trying to rebuild after the last big conflict, and they have trouble getting things like building materials into the country. So they're unable to rebuild schools and hospitals and homes. And they don't have, they don't have reliable electricity. Gaza is very much like a giant refugee camp, and probably not one of the better ones, Gord.
And people have very little options in terms of being able to leave or improve their situation.
No, it is very difficult, and the difficulty is because of the state of Israel's attitude towards Gaza, and also the agreements that it seems to have with Egypt, and because Egypt is not making things easy for Gaza either, it's a very difficult situation. Anyway, moving right along here, we had some human rights reports from the United Nations on Canada. And I don't have any details here, but I think one of them probably had to do with, the food, the nourishment available to First Nations in the Northern Territories. And the special rapporteur had things to say about that, which the government of the day totally disagreed with, and totally disregarding the fact that the rapporteur was a person who has credentials and experience and was not there on... He was there on a very serious mission and, you know, is working to do his job as well as it can be done. And it was very disheartening at the time to have that report basically totally dismissed by the government. But that's changed. There's a little different attitude, hopefully, now. And speaking of government change, I think at this time, we're looking now at August 22nd. I'm not sure that the election had been called yet. I think we knew that it was coming down the pipe. And we invited people at that time to take advantage of the time before the election to ask the candidates. We had a lot of candidates, if not all of them, I think, nominated. So we knew who they were, and we invited citizens to ask these candidates where they stood on human rights issues. And we had some issues that we referred to, certain topics that we could ask, you know, and one of them would be torture. I'm sure we could have them ask about First Nations issues, like the Lubicon Cree, that type of thing. So that was, I think, a worthwhile show. And then we were talking with, you and I were talking with Cheryl Stadnichuk about her participation. This was on August 28th, with a delegation of 11 trade unionists from 4 different public sector unions, and they went to Colombia for 12 days. And she told us that she knew, or knows, at least one Colombian activist who wears a bulletproof vest because of very real death threats. So we asked the question and discussed, what is the Canadian government doing to encourage the Colombian government to improve treatment of its indigenous people? Now, Colombia is a country with which Canada has a free trade agreement. So we should be able to have some effect on how the Colombian government was treating its indigenous dissidents and activists. So that was a very, very interesting first-person conversation with someone who has been there and talked to people who know what's going on there. And once again, Gord, I'm just hoping that we'll see a little different focus when it comes to government activity in the developing world. Alrighty, and then on September the 4th, we were able to have the honor of speaking with Lorna Standing Ready. And this was a very powerful program, and Lorna was able to talk to us about her experiences with residential school as a child and as a mother. And so we had a pretty broad conversation on that particular day, both of the personal and the personal experiences of Lorna Standing Ready, and then on the general progress of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which of course has delivered its final report and 94 recommendations, which I understand our new Prime Minister has basically committed to all the 94 recommendations to accept and act on. So we look forward to that. Then we're looking at the Syrian refugee crisis on September 12th. And again, that was a show that I did myself. And there's, it's not hard to check that stuff out. You just have to check the news, go on the internet, and you'll look and see that the Syrian refugee crisis at that time and still was not a new problem. This has been on the go since the. I'm afraid, you know, this was one of the effects of the Arab Spring, and it's happened in many different situations where dissidents think they're going to get international support to rise up against their dictatorial or whatever the governments that are oppressing them, and so they rise up and then discover that a lot of the support that they're expecting was all talk and no action, and they end up in a situation where they've made themselves a target for government retribution. And that's basically what's happened in Syria, where there are some people that are trying to get more democracy in their lives, in their country, in their government, and the president was quite against that and responded very violently, and the developed world, you know, the international world really didn't respond in a cohesive, positive way, and here we are with millions of people displaced. And with the result, of course, Canada is committed to getting 25,000 of the hundreds of thousands of refugees that exist as a result of what's going on in Syria. It was not new then, and it's not now, but hopefully we'll see more cooperation, and we'll see fewer pictures of refugees drowning, trying to cross the Mediterranean, and that type of thing. More along the same topic, on September 18th, we talked with Syed Muazzam, who's a member of the Pakistan-Canada Cultural Association, and we talked about the worldwide refugee problem, with particular focus on the Syrian problem. And at that time, the Canadian government's lack of a sufficient response to the worst refugee crisis since World War II. So that was a very good show, you know. And once again, times have changed, government policy has changed, and we're seeing some action. And it's a good start. It's good to see that. Then we had a totally different show. And I found it to be a very informative and very powerful show, and I would recommend to anyone to revisit on our podcast site, where I had an interview with Sandra Morris, who is a social worker, and she is from Saskatchewan, but spent time in Vancouver, living there, and had some very difficult times, and narrowly escaped being one of the victims found on the Pickford farm as a result of the problems in the investigation of missing women in Vancouver. You know, the failings of the RCMP, the failings of the Vancouver Police Department. And I'm not sure what the final tally was. In fact, I think in the end, people really don't know how many people Willie Picton killed and ended up on his farm outside Vancouver. So this was a very, very powerful show. And I felt privileged to have Sandra on the show and tell us her story. And I think... Let's see now. Moving right along. Well, you had some from October, Gord? Or where am I? I'm getting
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking with the time that we've got available, we might just highlight a...
Oh, right, I wasn't watching the clock.
Just a few of the remaining programs. We won't be able to touch on all of them, but I think that one I'd like to make sure we do mention is we were very fortunate to be able to have, on November 27th, Carol Browers, who is project manager for the Regina Region Local Immigration Project. That's an initiative that the Regina Open Door Society is a partner to, and other community groups. And Carol was wonderful in terms of joining us and talking about what would be useful in terms of people beginning to get ready to support the Syrian refugees as they were about to arrive in Canada. Another program that I'd really like to encourage people to take a moment to listen to, if you haven't done so already, is the November 20th program, and that's when we had Dr. Niloufar Shidmir, who's the writer-in-residence at the Regina Public Library. She talked about her work as a writer and poet. She's a specialist in Iranian literature and cinema, and writes in English and is published in English and in Farsi. And that was a fabulous program, and we were so fortunate to have her as a guest. And then skipping forward for a little bit, if we can, December 11th, we had a special program with Crystal Giesbrick, who is active with Amnesty International here, as I am, but also in her work capacity, she is staff with the Provincial Association of Transition Houses and Services of Saskatchewan, or PASS. And Crystal talked with yourself, Jim, and also Samia Farah, who is Ali, who is a student at the Campbell Collegiate. And the interview was all about Crystal's trip to the Third World Conference of Women's Shelters that was held in Netherlands earlier in the fall. And that was a great program. I listened to that and thought, you know, we're so fortunate to have the experience that Crystal brings to her work here in the community, and also her contribution to Amnesty International. The other program that I think was a highlight for the year was when we had as a special guest on December 18th somebody who is a Syrian refugee who has become very well known, I think, and recognized in the community. His name is Hani, and he's a student. He had left Syria when he was 18 years old and lived for a few years in a refugee camp. He came to Regina with his family in early June of 2015 with his parents and brothers and sisters. After having been in the camp for a number of years and in pretty difficult circumstances, Hani is an amazing individual in that he is visually impaired, but he's also been able to become a very accomplished photographer. And when he was in the camp, learned how to use his camera very well and has created an incredible record of the conditions in the refugee camps, which is available to, you can find that quite readily online as well. So, again, I encourage people to, if you missed that particular interview, go back to the December 18th podcast, and maybe, Jim, it's worth you sharing where that podcast, you know, people can find any of the podcasts for Human Rights Radio before we finish up the program.
Right. All you have to do is go to Human Rights Radio, that's all one word, .podbean, that's podbean.com, and that will take you right to our webcast or our podcast page, and you'll be able to access all these podcasts that we were talking to you about. So we've got some interesting shows there, and I'm sure that you would find them interesting. I just want to touch on a few things here. We're just about out of time. But one of the things that's ongoing, we're continuing to call for the release of jailed blogger Raif Badawi. He was flogged in January. He's still at risk for further flogging because they didn't like his blog. And we're continuing to write and demonstrate and sign petitions in support of Raif Badawi. Let's see here now. In September, we were happy to report that Mohamed Fahmy was released. And he, along with two Al Jazeera colleagues, had been jailed in Egypt for simply being a journalist and doing his job. And his comment after he was released was, "If you doubt these campaigns make a difference, I'm living proof they do." So I think on that note, we'll say good afternoon, Gord. It's been a wonderful year for Human Rights Radio, and we're looking forward to providing more interesting programs and guests and talking about human rights, talking about torture, talking about issues that are important to Canadians in Canada, and First Nations issues. We're looking forward with some enthusiasm and optimism. So as we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."